Welcome to U.S. Commercial Service Market Brief. It's February, a month in which we celebrate two occasions. One, President's Day, where we honored Presidents Washington and Lincoln. President Washington declared more than 200 years ago that in order to have friendly relations with other countries, our young nation should trade and exchange knowledge. The second special occasion this month was the start of the free trade agreement between the United States and Peru. We go now to Peru to talk with Senior Commercial Officer John Simmons at the U.S. Embassy in Lima. John, it sounds like George Washington had it right all those years ago.
Certainly with regard to trade in Peru, I think he did. It's an interesting time to be here, and there's a lot happening that's of relevance to U.S. companies.
And what is the most relevant aspect of the free trade agreement? How is it going to benefit immediately U.S. companies who choose to sell there?
Well, it's a bit hard to identify maybe one point. As you know, these trade documents are voluminous, covering hundreds of pages, and if not every aspect, many aspects of a trade relationship. But I think probably the most immediate noticeable benefit for U.S. firms is that as of February 1, 2009, about 80% of U.S. goods that are exported to Peru will enter duty-free. And that obviously gives us a leg up on competitor products who are still assessed whatever the prevailing duty is for a given product.
Hmm. And what were the duties before the FTA went into effect compared to now?
It varied quite a bit, and what's interesting is that the commercial environment here has actually been improving for a number of years. The Peruvian government has unilaterally been reducing import tariffs even before the FTA went into effect. You're still seeing import duties of 2, 3, maybe 10% on some items for competitor nations, where, again, most of our products will now come in at 0%. But all products, including U.S. goods, will still face the 19% value-added tax that applies here.
Hefty, but not unusual throughout the world.
I think for Americans it seems high, but you're right, for the rest of the world that's not that unusual. And given that it applies to all products, it's not discriminatory against the U.S.
And what about the paperwork, John? Do U.S. Business people face a blizzard of forms and certificates of origin to fill out in order to take advantage of the FTA?
Well, things like certificates of origin actually should get cheaper, should get easier and more uniform. And actually, that's a fairly relevant question because my staff and I are just trying to define precisely how U.S. firms will need to go about filling out that paperwork and what will apply. I mean, in general, Peru strikes me, in my experience, as a fairly bureaucratic place. So there are still hoops you need to jump through, particularly if you're establishing an office here. But under the FTA, the goal is for all shipments coming from the United States into Peru to clear customs within 48 hours. That's not a universal requirement, but it is a key goal that we will be focusing on, and that's important for U.S. companies.
Okay, and then in order to get through this bureaucracy, which might come as a surprise to some Americans who may not know much of the history of Peru, you're there, of course, to assist them along the way. We're there here in Washington. How do we get in touch with you in order to take advantage of what you offer there?
I think the easiest way is just Google U.S. Embassy Peru, and you'll find a link to the commercial section. And from there, you can find myself, my staff, who are identified by their industrial specialties. All kinds of information is available, not only on the commercial relationship and key sectors, but broader information on the economy and trade and so on. So just start with a simple Google search and you'll find us.
Okay, and to add to that, I might advise our listeners, if they want to talk to a real person right away, Monday through Friday during business hours, they can call toll-free 1-800-USA-TRADE and talk to a specialist here in Washington who will then be very happy to pass them on to you in Lima, John, and your great staff there. About Peru, more specifically, the notion that many of us have here in the United States, Machu Picchu, of course, wonderful natural beauty, but a fair amount of poverty. Some might call it grinding. Government that is democratic now, but has not always been the case. Which one of these Perus do you see here? And what is the most important thing to keep in mind when judging this market by current standards?
I think the most important thing to keep in mind is the pace of change here. You're correct that poverty is still a concern, and the official poverty rate includes almost 40% of the population. That's been coming down fairly steadily. But what's interesting about Peru is its economic achievements in the last few years. The size of the economy will basically double in this decade. In the last 2 years, 2007 and 2008, Peru achieved economic growth rates of 9% in each of those years. And that's really transforming the standard of living for many people, and obviously of primary interest for us, generating quite a bit of demand for imported products, including from the U.S. And if you look at the trade numbers, it's pretty impressive. In 2008, U.S. exports to Peru increased by 50%. In 2007, by 41%. So just in the last 2 years, the amount of goods that we sell in Peru has more than doubled. And what's interesting is we're not just selling to the traditional consumers, which tend to be the mining sector, which is the most prominent single industry here, but we're seeing diversification in the economy, which is then leading to diversification in the customer base for U.S. products.
Yes, and what's interesting is the growth numbers that you cited there, because one of the things we try to do here in Washington with the people we speak to daily is encourage them to look at the world not as a huge and forbidding place of more than 100 different nations, but one strategy would be to focus on those countries that are showing healthy growth, even in this era of declining growth, including in the United States. So it's really surprising to hear you talk about those numbers in Peru. And what are Peruvians consuming, as you say, beyond the mining sector?
Well, let me address briefly the financial crisis, which you kind of alluded to, because I suspect that's on a lot of people's mind. We don't really see much evidence of it yet. I mean, Peruvians are still surprisingly confident about their economy, and the economy is continuing to grow. There has been a slight decline in the last few months in their exports, which could be an initial sign that the economy is being impacted by global circumstances. I think it's still a little too early to know how deeply Peru will be impacted. The government thinks growth may be in the 4-5% range. I saw a private sector estimate of about 3% for this year. So it's a little hard to know, but they are being impacted somewhat. But most observers think they'll do better than much of the world. And what Peru buys from the U.S. and elsewhere is a somewhat narrow but expanding range of products. Mining really is king here. Peru has world-class reserves of gold, copper, silver, zinc, lead, and a number of other minerals. And the result is you've got a number of major international firms with very large mining operations here, and they are consumers of a wide range of machinery, a lot of which they buy from the United States. Typically, about half of all U.S. exports into Peru have been products supplied to the mining sector. Mm. And some indication of the importance to the economy of the mining sector is the fact that about 60% of Peru's exports are minerals. That's changing for a couple reasons. One is the world price for a lot of commodities in the mining sector have gone down quite a bit. So has demand. But also we're seeing demand fill out in other sectors. Peru is undertaking some steady development of its oil and gas sector. So you're seeing machinery related to oil and gas exploration and development become more prominent. The telecommunication sector has grown very quickly, so a lot of high-tech exports from the United States, telecom, computers, and so on. Other things like plastics and chemicals and construction equipment are also doing very well in this market. So there's a fairly broad base of products kind of broadly defined as industrial goods or infrastructure related that do particularly well here.
And what about the role that the country plays in the larger region? Is Peru a place that could act as a springboard into adjacent countries?
That's an interesting question, and it's something that's happening. You've got a number of fairly prominent U.S. consumer good companies who traditionally have serviced the domestic market that are now using Lima as their regional headquarters to serve also Ecuador, Bolivia, neighboring countries. So we're seeing a bit more of that. And I think part of the reason for that is kind of the political situation here versus other places. The government has been pursuing kind of very moderate policies, very outward-looking. Peru has negotiated trade agreements not only with the U.S., but with Canada, Singapore. It's looking to conclude agreements with the EU, with Japan, with China. So it's been a very activist, very kind of outward-looking policy of the last few years. And one of the results is that Peru is kind of taking on the environment of being a much more open place commercially.
Well, and what's it physically like there, John? It's night now. What do you see when you look out your window or when you walk to work this morning?
It's a very contrasted environment here. There's a thin strip of coastal desert that runs the entire country, which is extremely dry. It virtually never rains. In fact, the first rain I've seen in the year and a half I've been in Lima occurred about 2 weeks ago. And then if you go 80 to 100 miles inland, you've got the Andes Mountains that rise very abruptly to over 20,000 feet. And then you've got the eastern third of the country, which is Amazonian jungle. It's a very different place depending on where you are. Lima, which is where I live, is home to about 1 in 3 Peruvians. It's got a population of 9 million people, so it's one of the largest cities in the Americas. And it's also home to about a half of Peru's gross domestic product generation. So the economy and the population is centered quite heavily in Lima.
And speaking about those 1 in 3 that one would see when they arrive at the airport there, say I'm an American arriving for the first time, I rumble into town. What can you tell me about what I should or should not do with respect to the business culture there?
Well, I don't know if there's anything unique to Peru. Like any place, you've got to kind of be aware of local habits, but, you know, Peruvians are very used to dealing with foreigners, and certainly the U.S. business presence has been longstanding. Peruvians are very gracious hosts. They're very proud of their cuisine, which is unique to the region and is quite good. And at virtually any function, they're likely to serve you the national drink, which is a pisco sour, which is made from a brandy-type liqueur, which is largely produced in southern and central Peru.
Well, John, you're making me both hungry and thirsty, and I want to thank you on behalf of our listeners today for sharing a little bit of Peru with us. It's been fascinating.
Great talking to you.
Thanks so much. That's John Simmons, our Senior Commercial Service Officer, talking to us from Lima, Peru. And it's been a pleasure having you listen to us today, and we hope to see you soon on another Commercial Service Market Brief. On behalf of my colleagues in Peru and around the world, I'm Doug Barry in Washington. Thanks for listening.